broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Welcome to the show, episode 922 of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Dalamore, joined today by the lovely, talented, and as always, scholarly, Brittany Page.
So we have exciting news about the DNC, and that is that we are going to the DNC.
They are lucky to have us. It is exciting. I am excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we got credentialed, so we get to go as content creators.
Is it content creators or media? Which designation did we get?
I think it's content creators. I don't know. But I think it was they were taking the step of credentialing content creators because typically it's only delegates, media, and invited guests that can go to the convention.
Yeah, I think that's still kind of the deal. And they've added our category. Is that it?
Well, yeah, I think they're making...
Isn't it great how much I know about this?
They're making space for content creators. I don't know. I don't know if it's including it in media. I don't know if it's a separate aspect of media, but recognizing that there are independent media organizations that exist,
yeah,
and that they play an important role in educating the public, in
very
advocacy.
It's a great addition. Smart, and like seems like a self-evident thing that they should be doing.
Yeah, it's super important, especially with what we do on this show, which is talk a lot about how the media doesn't always get it right.
Yeah.
And I know these are companies that have a lot of resources, and so it's a shame when, you know, they're
fucking it up.
Yeah, I mean, even a most... This is diverting from what we're talking about with the DNC, but I promise we'll get back there. A huge example of this week was at the Olympics, and the boxer from Algeria.
Yeah.
And the panic over accusations that she is transgender or a man or
right.
All of these attacks on her. And the Boston Globe had to apologize because it made it to print that this boxer from Algeria was transgender. Yeah,
not only did it make it to print, the headline of the article.
Right.
Called the biological woman a trans woman, which is just kind of multi-layered. Let's talk about this just for a second.
Okay.
One, calling someone transgender isn't a slur. It's the motivation behind the accusation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like calling someone... the way you call someone a Jew matters. You know what I mean? The intent behind what you're calling them and how you call them that, like the word queer. The queer community isn't a negative thing to call them unless you're Steven Crowder calling them queers, mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing that's been run away with these bigots, like Megyn Kelly, of course Megyn Kelly, and a host of others, including the former president of the United States, Donald Trump, at a rally yesterday.
Right. Well, yeah, the motivation for calling the boxer transgender and making an accusation that she entered into women boxing with the specific intent to harm women.
Exactly. That's
what the argument
yeah,
is.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's creating this chaos surrounding this story to amplify hatred and bigotry toward the trans community. That's the
and
purpose of
suspicion
it.
Suspicion and fear. It's just all the worst fucking things.
Right. Yeah. And so it made it to print in the Boston Globe, this false information. And you would expect better from the Boston Globe. I mean, this is the spotlight team that
yeah.
does investigative reporting about abuse in the Catholic Church. I mean,
it's not a Rupert Murdoch paper.
No. Like, you would expect more from the Boston Globe.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the Spotlight team, by the way, was responsible for
right,
that.
Right, but it's the paper that owns the Spotlight team.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, so it's important that the DNC recognize independent media.
Oh, we're back there. That's what we're talking about. Yeah, listen, I'm excited for it. It'll be the first time that you and I have been in Chicago together, which will be a fun time. I don't think you've ever been to Chicago.
I have not.
But also, I've never been to a nominating convention of either party, Republican or Democrat. Yeah. So this is, it's going to be a great time. We're really going to seek out some good conversations. We're going to put together some audio, obviously, for this show, for our separate YouTube channels. It's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of not sleeping, and a lot of doing what we do.
Yeah, so we do want recommendations for things to do in Chicago. I don't know how much time we're going to have to do those things because of the content creation.
I also just said no sleep, so we'll have plenty of time. We're going to be there for 96 or 150 hours. No, none of it will be spent sleeping, so.
Yeah, so it's known for its food, and I love food, and I want to go to places that have some good food, so send me in the direction of the best Applebee's, and I will be there.
Only longtime listeners will get the joke. So that'll be a good time. Thank you for joining us. Episode 922. Can you believe 922 episodes of the little show that could?
Yeah, sorry. Yes. Mm-hmm. It is great.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to bring up the fact that we're also planning an election night live stream. So we've done election night live streams the past few elections. I don't remember when it started.
Certainly the past two general elections. And then some of the midterms we've done as well.
Yeah, so we're going to be doing that again. I know there's several people that are going to be doing election night live streams.
We're really going to try to do it up, though. We're doing a lot of planning in advance, and we want to do it right.
Yeah, we're going to have segments. We're going to have guests. We're going to be doing things to make it exciting. So if you don't yet have plans for your election night, let us be your plans and join us on Jesse's YouTube channel for the election night live stream, and you will start seeing us promoting that over the next few weeks leading up to the election. And again, it's nice going into this election not feeling a sense of dread and terror like I was just a few weeks ago, and I'm really going into it, at least so far still right now. Things can change.
Sure.
I'm feeling still pretty good and still pretty excited. So I'm still scared. I have a lot of fear.
There's very real things to be scared about.
Yeah, I'm very scared, of course, but I'm trying to focus on the possibilities. And
well, now so let me understand you correctly. Let me find out if I'm hearing you right. Mm-hmm. Before, you didn't really feel like there was a lot to be positive about. Mm-hmm. And now you're still afraid. But at least now there's things that are positive to cling to that, oh, okay, there is a chance here. Mm-hmm. We're not going to be just plunged into an existential crisis for democracy and our very lives.
Yeah, I know it's kind of a hopeless thought, but I was feeling like Donald Trump winning the election was inevitable a few weeks ago. And it was difficult for me to escape that mindset because I know it's not a healthy or positive place to be, but when Joe Biden announced his decision and Kamala Harris stepped up, it really changed the calculus, and that made me feel hopeful for the first time in a long time.
The energy in the country changed dramatically on a dime.
Yeah.
I mean, Kamala Harris has raised a third of $1 billion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think there are a lot of things that are working in our favor right now, and I think that's really great. And I think we just need to keep that momentum going. And we're facing an upcoming decision about the VP to be announced Tuesday. I don't know how much is riding on that. I mean, I know that there's going to be people in the Democratic Party that if, like, Josh Shapiro is selected, are going to be pretty disappointed.
I'll be disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, I will be disappointed, but
I don't think she's going to. If she does that, it's going to be a pretty big fuck up. It's a pretty big mistake, I think.
Yeah, I mean, listen, ultimately, I am still voting for her, so it doesn't.
Of course.
It doesn't matter, ultimately.
Of course.
But yeah, I would definitely absolutely not prefer that, and I hope that that's not the case, because I think it will interfere with the momentum. Right now, you have a lot of unity in the Democratic Party. Leftists, moderates. There's a lot of unity right now.
Yeah.
And I think picking Josh Shapiro will ruin that unity. And
yeah, I was team Kelly, Mark Kelly,
mm-hmm.
and I'm for sure Tim Walz. Mm-hmm. I was really excited about the possibility of Mark Kelly being on the ticket, and I don't want that now. I really want Tim Walz. I think he's the way to go. He's real. He's genuine. He's just authentic as fuck, and he can communicate progressive policy.
Yes,
in a way that really. Nobody can. Even Bernie Sanders doesn't talk about it in the way that he does.
Yeah. I think that's true. Yeah. It's a similar approach, but it is different in a way that is very grounding. And I think maybe it's because Bernie, you said this the other day when I was listening to him. I was playing a clip, just his voice was echoing throughout the house. And you made a remark about how he kind of always takes the interview back to the same place about income inequality.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe it's just that it's like playing a tape, you know, kind of like you've heard it before. And so it's not landing as it used to, the message. And maybe people are too familiar with what Bernie has to say now that it's just kind of, yeah, we've heard that before. It's not moving the needle. And Tim Walz is saying something similar. And he's saying it in a different way. And
yeah.
So it's really powerful to hear the message delivered in a different way that I think can really unify a lot of people across the political spectrum, I think.
Yeah, I think the difference here is Bernie, and by the way, what I was saying to you, I want to communicate to the audience, wasn't a criticism. It was, I was admiring that he never gets thrown off message.
Yeah, yeah.
It's constantly going back to talk about the important points.
Absolutely.
But I think the difference in how they communicate is, and I'm just thinking about it now, is Bernie looks at things from a larger macro 30,000 foot view, and Tim Walz, largely, I don't think this is like absolute, but Tim Walz talks about things from that can be practically applied to your life and your experience.
Mm-hmm.
Feeding your children at school, like specifics that people can like, oh yeah, yeah, that would make my life better.
Mm-hmm.
And Bernie talks about larger concepts, which they're both brilliant, it's great. But I think for this election, really the Tim Walz approach is what we need.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to get to more of this at the end of the show, because on the last show we had mentioned that Mark Kelly wasn't really doing media, and he started doing media.
Yeah.
And so we have some comparison clips at the end
do
of the
we?
Show.
Good,
yeah,
good,
yeah.
Good.
So
yeah.
We can kind of illustrate, I think, what helped you kind of see maybe the change of heart there. So, okay, we have some listener communication. We'd love to hear from you. 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. And we're going to start with some listener emails. This one is from Sean R. Hi, Brittany and Jesse. Wanted to share my thoughts on the recent events around the Democratic Party's choice of candidate in the recent past. One, I am absolutely thrilled to support Kamala Harris. She was a DA, a senator, and a VP. She absolutely has the qualifications. She can claim some amount of credit for all of the accomplishments gained during this term and loses the age and crime family smears the Republicans have been laying at the feet of Biden for years. Also, back in 2020, I didn't think she'd be the candidate, but I fantasized about her debating Trump. I know he'll duck that if he has any opportunity to do so now, but now it's still an actual possibility. I'll make popcorn for that show. Two, still, I am angry about how the mainstream press and how the Democratic Party's elite pushed to get Biden to bow out. I'm not saying that anyone did anything illegal, but still, I feel that some people in positions of power decided to ignore my vote in the primary. I chose Biden because there is currently exactly one person who has beaten Trump in our fixed electoral college, and that's who I picked. I have optimistic feelings around Kamala and her chances, especially based on the response I've seen to her candidacy, but I don't like how my voice was pushed out. Love you guys. Glad you guys were there for your friend and their family. Keep on speaking truth. Sean R.
Yeah, I think this is, I think, a common refrain that we're hearing from listeners in both in communication, but also just generally witnessing online. And I kind of feel the same way. It's what we've been saying, and I've been really trying to reinforce on YouTube quite a bit, is that look, we need to keep our eye on the ball about what exactly the threat is, who the threat is. And if Joe Biden, if some weird thing happens and he's the nominee again, you're voting for Joe Biden. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But if Kamala Harris is the nominee, you're going to vote for her. You should be keeping your eye on the threat, which is Donald Trump. If Kamala Harris picks Josh Shapiro, you vote for the ticket. You do it. You vote up and down the ballot, Democrats, because we need a wild majority in both the House and the Senate. I mean, the future of your children, of your family, of democracy in America is at stake. And look, it's not going to be an easy road to Inauguration Day for Kamala Harris, even if she wins outright easily both the popular vote and the Electoral College. Donald Trump and his team, they're already laying the groundwork for legal challenges where there need be no legal challenges. This is going to be happening. I talked about, yeah, it's... this is the scary part to me. It's not winning the election legitimately. It's how they're going to try to illegitimately steal it. Mm-hmm. That, for me, is really the scary part.
And by that, you just mean the attempts at throwing up roadblock, because all those efforts, similar to the stuff we're seeing now about how they're trying to make these legal challenges about changing the ballot from Biden to Kamala.
There's and that's, chatter about
that's going
it.
Nowhere. Yeah. That's going. Nothing's going to come of that. You said that you are concerned about this after the election. Is it in the same way? Because you know it's not going to go anywhere, ultimately.
Well, I don't know that it's not going to go anywhere. We've got a Supreme Court that just ruled a president can do anything they want if they call it an official act and be immune from prosecution, up to and including assassinating political rivals. So that's what I'm worried about, is the judiciary, which is largely a conservative judiciary because of what Donald Trump was able to accomplish. Yeah, I'm worried. That one, they are training an army of poll watchers. They are infiltrating precincts all across the country to put in place people to challenge ballots, to challenge specific voters, to call into question the procedures. It's not just whoever wins the election wins the election.
Yeah, so I guess I don't know enough about all that and how it would work logistically. Similar to when everyone was talking about Biden being removed from the ballot and the legal consequences of that. I remember AOC, prior to Joe Biden making his announcement, she did a lengthy Instagram Live where she basically talked about how in these private rooms, she has asked legal scholars, well, how will this work, though, if he steps down and Kamala is put up? How will that work in terms of ballot challenges? And she seemed to be expressing legitimate concern that no one could answer her question about how that process would work. And if they were to attempt to block that, the Republicans challenging it, what the argument against that would be to keep Kamala on the ballot. And she was concerned that they didn't have answers for her. And you know, all of this chatter that was happening has just gone away.
Right.
And so I don't know what happened with all of that. Like, what were all of the fears that Bernie Sanders and AOC were expressing about the legal obstacles with doing this? Because so far, that has completely disappeared.
Well, a lot of it is just chatter that made them, I think, a little skittish. Because one party doesn't have any control or say over how the other party nominates whoever they want to nominate. If the Democratic Party wants to say, we want the fattest person to be our nominee, okay, this is who we're going to put up. Now the American people can vote. It's a party process. It has nothing to do... for instance, I don't give a single fuck who the Republicans nominate. I don't care by what measure or method they do it. That's their deal. That's their game. That's their process. Now, once the candidate's on the ballot, the democracy takes over and people vote, and then we work our way through our broken system with the Electoral College or whatever. But a party nominating system is not up to the other party to have any say in whatsoever, or the courts.
So the part of the email here from Sean R. that I want to respond to is, in the aftermath of the debate performance, when all of the pressure started, there was so much resistance in the Democratic Party to Joe Biden stepping down, to the point where when Jesse left to go back to Scotland and I filled in for him doing videos on his channel, I started prepping the audience for what I believed was the inevitable outcome that Joe Biden would not be the nominee. And the comments were overwhelming attacking me.
Yeah, like you're a traitor or something.
Overwhelming attacking me for even saying that, for even bringing it up as though I want Donald Trump to be elected. When what I was doing was seeing the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
And that this was the inevitable outcome. And that it was time to start moving in the direction of what was best for defeating Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And now we've arrived at this place where everyone seems to have forgotten how they responded to the initial reports that Joe Biden was going to be stepping down.
Yeah, I see that too.
And I think it's time for people to do some reflecting about if you were in that space and you were attacking people who were saying that Joe Biden needed to step down because they were attacking Joe Biden and his legacy and they wanted Donald Trump to win. Like, it's time to do some reflection on what was the knee-jerk reaction there that had you attacking fellow Democrats who want what's best for the country, who are trying to figure out what the best pathway is forward to defeat Donald Trump, you know? And I feel like we're just, like, moving past that like it never happened.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of the mind. Like, I agree with you generally, but I think that the debate wasn't the defining moment that made it clear that Joe Biden should step down. For me, it was the weeks and weeks that followed the debate where it really was pretty clear that he is going through right now a pretty rapid decline physically. And there's, you know, some slowness cognitively, and I don't mean like he's dumb now. I just mean he thinks slower. He's got to take some time to work through what he wants to, the words coming out of his mouth, you know. And I think it was the weeks that followed that really, they cemented it for me that it's time. It's time to step down. Mm-hmm. But I'm still kind of working through it. We won't really know for another 2-3 years when we have a fuller picture of what took place in the timeline to be able to fully understand. You think that's possible?
Yeah, I mean, we just didn't have time on our side is the thing.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It was like a decision needs to be made as soon as... The thing is, I understand if you personally didn't feel like you saw enough in the debate, but what the issue is that a lot of Americans walked away from that since they operate on vibes.
And it's optics.
And optics.
Yeah.
They walked away from that like, ooh, this doesn't look good. And I mean, these are the people who, after the RNC, like they were interviewing Republicans on these voter panels that I watch constantly and torture myself with. They were interviewing these Republicans who are considering whether or not they're going to vote for Trump again. And they were interviewing them about the RNC. And I can't tell you how many times I heard Republican voters say, I was really hoping that he would deliver a unifying message. And during his speech at the RNC, he lasted about 30 minutes and it was really nice. He had a unifying message. And then it just became the same thing that we always hear all the time. And I'm sitting there like, what did you think was going to happen?
Look, I love hopeful people, but come the fuck on, right?
Yeah, they're just giving chance after chance after chance for improvement, and he has shown who he is. Well, he's 80 years old. He's always been this way.
Also, the media did the heavy lifting for Donald Trump, calling him unifying.
There were several
headlines that ran before his speech was over,
right?
Because they had a text version of the speech saying, oh, he strikes a unifying tone and blah, and then he did not.
Right.
He fucking did not do that.
Right, yeah. So
anyway, I would invite a lot of listener communication about this particular unplanned segment here. 657-464-7609. You can email a voice memo from your smartphone to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
Yeah, Sean R. really gave us a great opportunity to take off there with that conversation.
Yeah.
So let's thank Patreon supporters, because Patreon supporters, we could not do this show without our beautiful Patreon supporters.
It's because of our Patreon supporters that we're able to do things like travel to the DNC. We're not getting help from the DNC to pay for hotel rooms and flights and everything else. It's because of our Patreon supporters.
Absolutely. So we want to thank our new Patreon supporters for Snapdragon.
For Snapdragon.
Diane.
Diane.
TR and TS.
TR and TS.
John F.
John F.
And Dave.
And Dave.
And then we want to give a special shout out to Kevin M.
Kevin M.
Kevin M for increasing the pledge.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Kevin.
Remember that you can get 10% off of your Patreon price when you become an annual Patreon member.
What?
Yeah, it's a pretty great deal. So you might want to check that out. But like Jesse said, we couldn't do what we do without you. We're looking forward to the DNC. It'll be a whole new experience for both of us. We're looking forward to taking you behind the scenes of what's happening at the DNC. Yeah. Make sure that you're following us on social media at Dollamore, at Brittany E. Page, at I Doubt It Podcast. We don't normally say that during the show. That's not something that we promote every time. Why don't we do that?
I think because Twitter is a fucking shit face.
Well, it's not just Twitter. Threads, Instagram.
Yeah, yeah. At Dollamore, at Brittany E. Page.
I think it is a bummer, though, when Elon Musk took over. He just absolutely ruined Twitter.
And it's getting worse and worse by the day. Yeah. I mean, it really is just Nazi shit constantly.
Yeah, yeah.
I've really taken a step back. Anyway, listen, if you do want to support us on Patreon, we will actually give you the address to go. You can click the notes in the show notes here. But it's patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast. Moving on.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health. Their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today.
DR Power Equipment is the industry leader in field and brush mowers. Their full line of machines are designed to clear acres of tough weeds, woody brush, and saplings up to 3 inches thick, hour after hour, year after year. Just one mow, and you'll agree nothing stops a DR. Visit drpower.com to learn more and shop the sale today.
Stalemocracy, facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So we have some follow-up because on the previous episode, we talked about the killing of Sonia Massey. And this is the woman on July 6th that called the police because she was afraid that she was hearing noises outside of her home and thought maybe someone was trying to get into her home. It's now being reported that she struggled with some mental health concerns. Her mom on the 911 tape referenced paranoid schizophrenia. I don't know if that's the official diagnosis, but there seems to be some underlying mental health issues that she had been struggling with. And when the officers came to her home, instead of being helpful, they killed her.
Yeah.
And the officer that killed
her... And then proceeded to call her a crazy bitch on their body cams.
The officer who killed her is named Sean Grayson. And on that episode, we talked about how Sean Grayson had worked at 5 different law enforcement agencies in the years prior to his employment with the current one,
yeah,
I think
like in
from
the
like 2020.
Like 6 years or 4 years. Like it was more police departments than years.
Right.
And he had just job hopped.
Right. And we said that more would be coming out about his record. And now, you know, here we are. More is coming out about his record, including a remarkable situation where he was engaged in a high-speed chase in an earlier job, and he was told to stand down, and he disobeyed that order.
CBS News has uncovered notes from one of Grayson's former police chiefs during a reference check for his next police job. It was a warning of the trouble Grayson had already caused, and it doesn't stop there. Another supervisor said he failed to obey orders, especially during the high-speed chase you're about to see.
The red flags and warning signs were there prior to Deputy Grayson firing those fatal shots into Sonia Massey.
I'm trying to get help.
A woman home alone who called police for help over a possible intruder, but instead ended up with Deputy Sean Grayson.
Do what?
Grayson, who's now charged with her murder, had a troubled career that began with a stint in the Army, a discharge for misconduct, then followed by more accusations of misconduct.
We checked your front yard.
During his time in law enforcement, described as having trouble obeying orders.
We're at the end of 2nd Street. She's taking it out right.
Like with what happened here at his fifth police job when he refused an order by a superior at the Logan County Sheriff's Department to terminate a high-speed chase over a traffic infraction. His speed at times reaching 110 miles per hour.
Are you pursuing?
I'm about to terminate. She's flying up 121 right now.
But Grayson didn't stop. He did, however, turn off his lights and siren, but kept going anyways until he hit a deer.
Well, I'll definitely be terminated because a buck just smacked the side of my driver's side door.
Did you violate a direct order?
Yes.
From a supervisor about termination?
Yes, it did.
Grayson was questioned by a deputy chief and other top staff after that crash in Logan County.
Do you agree, before we conclude this, that there is a mountain of policy violations?
Yes, it is.
That you committed. 7 months on, how are you still employed by us?
I don't know.
Yet he continued to get a pass over and over again. Even during the Logan County hiring process of Grayson, there were warning signs from another past employer, the Auburn, Illinois Police Department, where he worked in 2022. CBS News obtained these notes from a discussion between the Auburn chief and a representative from Logan County, where Grayson had applied for a new job. It states the Auburn chief said Grayson struggles with report writing, that he was very aggressive with getting drugs. The chief expressed concern that Grayson was too aggressive, and that Grayson posted his drug arrests on Facebook, and the chief called him a bragger and was not great with evidence, left items laying around office.
The entire thing makes me sick.
Sangamon County board member Mark Ayers is on the jail committee that authorizes the hiring of new sheriff deputies. He says he was never informed of any negative notes about Grayson prior to hire, and his background was not shared with the committee.
I would never bring on someone that had that troubled past or that record.
As we have been reporting, Grayson worked for 6 police agencies since 2020, ending with Sangamon County, where he was entrusted to help residents in need like Sonia Massey. Board members Ayers said he wants changes in the hiring and screening process, along with a background review of all current sheriff deputies. Eric and Joe, there's going to be a lot of aftermath here.
Right. All right. Thank you, Dave.
That's a lot of covering of your ass, the hiring committee guy.
Mm-hmm.
Look, oh, but this was never shared with us. Well, you're on the committee. You ask for those details.
Right.
You demand that. You require that. You're like, well, they didn't bring it. I guess, okay, yeah, just hire whoever you like. Why the fuck are you there? Why are you, what's your job?
Yeah, and that.
What do you do here?
I've watched several interviews with Sheriff Jack Campbell, who they are asking to resign. He's saying he won't resign.
Right.
And that's the line that he's using to refute those calls for him to resign, is that he did what he could, essentially, and that there were no red flags in the hiring process. And he admits that he knew about the 2 DUIs. And I've seen other interviews where experts will say that is actually disqualifying. You would not hire someone who has 2 DUIs to be a police officer. So, I mean, it... It seems strange, like you said, to say we weren't provided that information. Well, wouldn't you ask, is this someone who you feel is a good officer? Does he seem aggressive? Is he doing his job effectively? Have you had to sit down with him and have conversations about how he's going to go to jail someday?
Well, what's strange to me is that the cops didn't even listen to the other cops about this guy, that he's too aggressive. That he's, this is so mild language, not good with evidence. Like,
right.
He just leaves evidence laying around where the chain of custody could be called into question and a conviction could be just destroyed. They didn't even listen to other cops who said this guy was a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Like, it just, what does it take? How do you weed out the bad apples when you know they're a bad apple when you hire them? Again, the chief needs to go. He needs to be fired. They need to rout this police department and every police department across the country and weed out these terrorists, these murderers.
I don't know if you also heard it on the audio there. So he was told to stand down, stop the high-speed chase. He turned off his lights, continued the high-speed chase, and then a buck smashed into his door.
A deer, yeah.
And he, after that happened, says, I'm going to be terminated because a buck smashed into my door.
Like, not even internally, personally taking responsibility for his actions.
Right.
You're not getting fired because the buck did something,
right,
dipshit. You're going to be fired and then ultimately not fired.
Right.
For disobeying a direct order, endangering the public that your role is to serve and protect by driving 120 miles an hour in a high-speed chase and likely not chasing a murderer.
Right. So that audio that you heard that was so shocking where he was being reprimanded, that news package didn't play a lot of it. So I found another news package that played more of the audio, and it actually is worse.
7 months on, how are you still employed by us?
I don't know.
That's Grayson in a 2022 recording responding to his then-boss, Deputy Chief Nathan Miller, at the Logan County, Illinois Sheriff's Office, questioning him about his mishandling of a traffic case.
Do you understand that's a violation of pursuit policy?
Yes, I do.
Grayson was accused of violating department policy and submitting inaccurate reports.
But a lot of officers have been charged and end up in jail because that's what they perceived. Official misconduct will land you in jail.
Grayson's integrity also raised.
Others will say you have no integrity and you're lying. I'm calling you on your integrity. How does that make you feel?
I'm learning from it. I don't get angry.
Logan County eventually terminating Grayson.
If we can't trust what you say and what you see, we can't have you in our uniform.
They specifically said, I think I spoiled it because you hadn't heard this before, that officers like him end up in jail.
Right.
And here we are.
Yeah.
He killed someone. He took Sonia Massey's life.
Right.
And there were numerous instances where someone in a position of power, seeing that this man, Sean Grayson, should not have been in a position of power, and they could have done something about it.
Yeah.
And they didn't do anything about it.
And for those out there, I don't know what percentage of our audience would, you know, reflexively knee-jerk defend police, but this could have been avoided just by, oh, you got a, what I assume from the language they used, he got what's called a BCD, a big chicken dinner, a bad conduct discharge from the military. That right there is the only red flag you need not to hire this guy. And people will say, and this goes back to the people who might defend police, well, so this guy should never have a job again because he got a bad conduct discharge? Well, no, I'm not, but you don't get to be a cop.
Carry a gun.
You don't get to demonstrate antisocial behaviors and then have arrest power and detain power and be in a position to usurp people's constitutional rights. You don't get to do that. Some jobs have a higher level of requirement involved.
Well, and there are plenty of jobs where you can be successful, make money, create the life that you want for yourself, that you envision for yourself, where you are not given the powers to stop people on the street and revoke their freedom.
Yeah.
And kill them. And I mean, this is serious stuff. And there's a screenshot in one of these news packages of actual notes that were taken during one of these meetings, I guess, on his issues. And they said he's very aggressive with getting drugs. He posted his drug arrests on Facebook about a year ago. He's a bragger.
Yeah, they highlighted those in bullet points.
And then it says here, no write-ups / punishment. So he's posting his arrests on Facebook, and you guys are like, What? You're not doing anything about that? You're not writing him up? So again, it's just wildly disappointing. But also, we're getting the 911 call. This was Sonia Massey's mother who called, I believe, a day before Sonia Massey called the police herself and asked for them to come and help her. And I want you to hear the particular interaction, because Sonia's mom was worried about the police that would arrive to her home and how they would treat her daughter.
She gets upset, then she thinks everybody's after her, like paranoid schizophrenic.
Tonight, Sonia Massey's mother heard on newly released 911 calls warning her daughter was having a mental breakdown.
And please don't send no combative policemen that are prejudiced, please.
Okay, well, that would be done. Okay, they just do their job, okay?
I'm scared of the police. Please.
There's nothing to be fearful of, ma'am.
The sheriff's office confirms that call came in one day before then-deputy Sean Grayson shot and killed Massey in her Springfield, Illinois home.
I'll kill you in that. You better fucking, I swear to God, I'll fucking shoot you in your face.
It sounds like Sonia's mom was trying to warn authorities, potentially warn your agency. How does that hit you now, knowing what happened?
Well, I haven't heard the tape. I'm certainly concerned. I want our deputies to have all the information they can before they arrive. And so I don't know why that wasn't transmitted.
Sangamon County Sheriff Jack Campbell releasing Grayson's personnel records showing two of his past employers said he needed more training. A third advised Grayson did not demonstrate good officer safety skills. The sheriff tonight says he put Grayson through 16 weeks of training, adding Grayson's previous employers, namely Logan County, never informed him of allegations of misconduct, including records show lying about a high-speed chase that violated department policy.
It's unfortunate. We needed the information, and it's a informal process, and it's simply, it was not provided.
Logan County tonight not responding to our request for comment. Grayson's pleaded not guilty to charges related to Massey's death. His attorney declining to comment. Massey's family is calling on the sheriff who fired Grayson to resign.
Will you resign?
I will not resign. I understand the pain that they're hurting and they want to hold somebody accountable. We are holding somebody accountable. That is Sean Grayson. He did this. He alone did this.
Maggie Vespa, NBC News, Springfield, Illinois.
So the same jerk-off sheriff who refuses to step down and take responsibility for his role in this categorizes this entire thing as unfortunate, not tragic, not a fucking nightmare for the family whose daughter, whose sister, whose relative was shot in the head, in the face, after being told, I'm going to shoot you in the face. He calls it, it's unfortunate. Disgusting.
Yeah. So Sheriff Jack Campbell needs to resign. And it's also just heartbreaking that Sonia's mother asked for officers to be aware of what her daughter was going through and to not send biased or combative officers. And that the 911 operator says, you don't need to worry about that, ma'am. And here we are.
Yeah. I wonder how that guy feels. Oh, no, cops are good. Those fears are unfounded. What do you mean, send a good cop? All cops are good. Oh, there's only a few bad apples. He's just repeating Republican talking points to her. And then her daughter, hours later, minutes later, dead at the hands of one of these good cops, apparently.
And bad cops, this is an example of bad cops making everyone's job more difficult, making the job of a 911 operator more difficult because they can't be... they can't be secure in the knowledge that they're sending someone who will actually be helpful. So in the week that this happens, Donald Trump made his appearance at the National Association of Black Journalists. And of course, we've all seen the clips of that where he talked about Kamala Harris turning black and just,
all of a sudden she's black.
Just bringing back up the racism that we all know Donald Trump usually goes to, his greatest hits. And there was a particular moment where during the National Association of Black Journalists Trump appearance, he was asked about comments that he made where he said he wanted to give officers federal immunity. And they specifically asked about this shooting involving Sean Grayson and Sonia Massey. And not only did he express that he hadn't really been following the case very closely, which is wild for a presidential candidate, he went on to give a word salad response that's not even worth playing here, because the real point that you need to take away from Donald Trump's view of officers and his view on police abuse is that he wants to protect officers like Sean Grayson. He wants them to have federal immunity.
That we're going to give immunity to police so they can do their job. I'm giving federal immunity to police officers so they can do their job.
Federal immunity. Ugh. Just listen. Going back to what you said about Donald Trump and his response, when he said, "Oh, I don't know about the case," and then he outlined all the details of the case because he did know. It's the same thing that the police chief or the sheriff did. "Oh, I haven't heard that call." What? Your officer allegedly murdered a citizen, and you haven't reviewed every piece of evidence from every detail of what took place?
Right.
That's a failure. You need to resign just for that. But it's the same thing does go, as you said, about someone who wants to be president of the United States and is putting forward this total immunity for officers. Donald Trump has suggested that people who are accused or suspected of shoplifting should be summarily executed while exiting the stores. He has a dystopian view of how the police function in our society and wants to give them absolute cover for anything that they do, including murder the citizenry.
Yeah, it's very frustrating to know who people like Donald Trump want to give the benefit of the doubt to. And the way that he talks about migrants coming to this country, and he has no compassion or sympathy for the difficulties that people must endure. He doesn't care about migrants coming to this country. He maligns them about talking about asylums, and they are mentally ill, and they are drug dealers, and all of this stuff. But then you bring up the fact that a cop killed a woman in her home when she called them for help, and she did nothing. And he doesn't know the details of the case and won't back down from a position that would protect that man who has nothing but violation after violation after violation in his work record.
Yeah.
So it's disturbing, but it's a pattern that Donald Trump has exhibited where he prefers to protect people that are in positions of power, that support him, that like him, and he speaks hatefully about people who can do nothing for him, who he views as not being beneficial in any way. And his nephew, Fred Trump, is making the rounds, promoting a new book that he wrote about the family. And there's been several anecdotes that have been making the headlines from this book. And one of them is how Donald Trump specifically talked about people with disabilities. And in this clip, you're going to hear Fred Trump specifically talking about his son, William, who has a disability.
And tell us more about what Donald Trump has said about your son.
Donald has never met William, ever. In fact, no one in the Trump family other than two of my cousins have met William. So when he said what he did to me, when a fund that had been set up for William's health, for his therapeutic needs, and I just want to clear something up. The reason a fund existed is because Donald orchestrated a plan to take my sister and me out of my grandfather's inheritance, which went back days after William was released after 7 weeks in hospital. Al, you'll remember that in the city. You have to understand that Donald was my trustee. He was my trustee, which meant he was supposed to protect me and my family. He did the exact opposite. So the fund was my money, but I had to ask for it back, which was troubling. So when the fund was running low, I called Donald and I mentioned that. And he said, "Your son doesn't recognize you. Let him die and move to Florida." Now, I don't know how you can explain that away, the cruelty of that comment. But as you'll read in All in the Family, he had said something very similar in our last Oval Office meeting with a group of advocates. He had called me back into the office when everyone dispersed and said, "Those people, all those expenses, they should just die." So it's hard to wrap your head around that.
We should note Donald Trump disputes this account. He said that in a statement, I helped him so much more than anyone else in his life, and this is the thanks I get. Eric Trump, the president's son, took to Twitter X last night saying it's disappointing that after decades of unwavering love, support, golf memberships, et cetera, that you have decided to cash in his words.
So he said there that Donald Trump disputes the account, and then nothing in that statement he read was disputing the account. It just said, I've helped him so much, and this is the thanks that I get.
Right.
That's not disputing the account.
Right. Media fucking failure.
Did he actually dispute the account or not? I'm left not having any clarity on that at all.
Yeah.
But how disgusting is this? How horrifying is this? And it's, again,
let your son die.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
And then move to Florida.
Yeah, it's disgusting. And I can hear people all around. I can hear the keyboards. Is this surprising? You know?
Yeah.
No, it's not surprising. But it's still worth talking about things that add to the volume of evidence that Donald Trump is who we know him to be. Because who knows if someone hearing this anecdote will be like, What the hell is this?
Yeah.
I can't believe he would say this. That's horrifying that he said this.
Yeah, I still think there is a percentage of the population of Trump supporters that it'll be the straw that broke the camel's back. Like, there is some amount that's too much, and they just haven't reached that point yet. I don't know fucking how. I don't know who these people are. But listen, we get voicemails here on the show. We get voicemails from our separate YouTube channels. And there is a percentage of people out there who are coming around and been like, ugh, I voted for him in 2016. I voted for him in 2020. And I was going to vote for him now, but I just can't do it.
Right.
They are out there.
Right. And this is the kind of thing that moves the needle. We know that people are not always convinced by facts, but they can be convinced by narratives, particularly those that touch on personal aspects of their own life. So if someone is the parent of a child with a disability and they are inclined to support Donald Trump, but they hear this story, it may land with them in a different way.
Yeah.
So I think this is an important story. We'd love to know what you think about it. 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. We also just want to talk broadly about some of Donald Trump's recent appearances, because as we know, he's been really going hard about Israel, his support of Israel, how the Republican Party needs to support Israel. But he also starts talking about it in a way where he ends up attacking Jewish people. And I think that we need to highlight this more often, because Republicans, the people in the Republican Party, they like to act like the anti-Semites are in the Democratic Party. But how do you explain Donald Trump talking like this?
Because he dislikes Jewish people and Israel more than Biden did. And Biden never did anything, and neither did Obama. If you're Jewish, if you vote for a Democrat, you're a fool, an absolute fool. And today it's almost like, I mean, Schumer has become a Palestinian. Chuck Schumer is officially now a Palestinian.
It's funny, but it's true. It's sad. He is. He is. And they tell me that this Harris's husband, Doug Emhoff, Mr. President, is Jewish. He's Jewish like Bernie Sanders is Jewish. Are you kidding me? He's a crappy Jew. Yeah. He's a horrible Jew.
What? What the fuck was that?
In a radio appearance where Donald Trump was laughing with someone who's talking about people who are, quote unquote, crappy Jews.
Remarkable, the state of the Republican. I mean, again, not shocking, not surprising. Save your fucking emails. Are you surprised by this? But it's still, it should blow your mind that this is where we are, that we have someone who could be elected president talking like this about disabled people, about immigrants, about asylum seekers, about Jews, even about Christians. They frequently talk about how America is a stupid country. And it all started, well, one, when he came down the escalator and talked about Mexicans are rapists and they do drugs or whatever, and I assume some are good people. And then we shifted to John McCain. He's a war hero because he was captured. They've thrown away all adherence to traditional conservatism, as they used to put it forward, and it's just now the cult of Donald Trump.
Well, also, Bernie Sanders lost family in the Holocaust, so to talk about his family, his history.
What kind of Jew he is.
It's disgusting. Yeah. But also using Palestinian there as a slur, almost, you heard, which kind of hits on the theme that we started with at the top of the show, which is they're using these terms that are not slurs, and they're turning them into slurs for political purposes. So we also...
Good point.
So we're also seeing Donald Trump in his media appearances. He's not just going to the classic racism that we know Donald Trump for. He's also going to sexism. And in a recent interview, he talked about Kamala Harris, and this is what he said about her.
I think they'll walk all over. She'll be so easy for them. She'll be like a play toy. They look at her and they say, we can't believe we got so lucky. They're going to walk all over her. And I don't want to say as to why, but a lot of people understand it.
And he's talking specifically about how she will be received on the world stage.
Right.
And he's like, I won't specify why, but I think a lot of people know why she would be considered a play toy.
It's just disgusting.
Yeah.
And also, just wildly factually inaccurate. She is respected. She was a pro. I mean, we don't have to go through her goddamn bio, but just get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, she's far more competent than Donald Trump
also
is.
Also, think about some world leaders that are women. Angela Merkel. I mean, Margaret Thatcher. Our history as a species is replete with strong female leaders. It's just that the United States is decades and decades and decades behind our peers in electing someone.
Yeah. Well, Donald Trump also showed his expertise on Christianity in an interview with Laura Ingraham. You know how he loves 2 Corinthians and it's a Bible.
Yeah,
He's really known.
I can't give you my favorite scripture. They're all just too special. That's just too special to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, which one? Old Testament? Just too much. I can't. It's all just too special to me to even talk about.
Yeah. So I played this clip. You listened to it and you said to me, is that a joke?
But religion, you know, it gives you some hope. Gee, if I'm good, I'm going to heaven.
Do you believe in heaven?
I do. If I'm good, I'm going to heaven. And if I'm bad, I'm going to someplace else, like over there, right?
Over
but
there.
It gives you, there's something that is so good for a country.
So good
we
for
lost
the country.
A lot.
When you pray, what do you pray for?
Well, I pray for our country. I pray, obviously. I pray for the same thing you pray. Our family and our country. We have things. We have a family. We have a country. And I guess we have a world. I pray for the world, too.
Listen.
I guess we have a world. Oh, my God.
When you played it, I was only listening to the audio, much like right now. And I thought that it was like one of those accounts that, like, selectively edit something.
Yeah.
I didn't realize, and the audience should know this.
Yeah.
This is straight from the Laura Ingraham Twitter account.
Yeah.
She shared this.
Yeah, yeah.
This isn't if it's selectively edited, it's to make him look as good as possible.
Yeah.
And that is dumb fuckery right there. Like, what is he talking about? I pray for the same things you pray for.
Yeah.
We got a family. We got a country, and I guess we got a world, you know.
Oh, my God.
And people listen to this, and I guess because they've bamboozled themselves, they're so desperate for him to be a legitimate character that they fill in all the blanks that he leaves with other shit.
Yeah, but Kamala will be a play toy. Kamala won't be taken seriously on the world stage.
You know, if I'm good, I go to heaven. If I'm bad, I go, you know, to the other place, over there. I'm going to go over there. Yeah. Unbelievable. They so desperately want him to be an evangelical, mighty, righteous man of God that they fill in the fucking blanks for the guy.
Yeah, well, Donald Trump, he isn't even strong on culture war stuff. Like, you'd think that because he's the leader of the Republican Party that he would be strong on the talking points for culture war stuff.
Yeah, be the leader of the battle against, you know, whatever,
but
trans stuff or gender stuff. Or
yeah, even there he struggles. He was asked during the same interview with Laura Ingraham about his pronouns.
Live.
Kamala Harris in her Twitter bio, which I never noticed until this morning, states her pronouns as she/her. What are your pronouns?
I have no, I don't want pronouns. I don't want pronouns. I saw
so
that.
You're fluid? What is that?
Nobody even knows what that means. Ask her to describe exactly what that means.
What is that? Why are people
nobody
doing
knows.
That? Well, what is
nobody knows that her pronouns are she, her? Ask her what that means. Your pronouns are he, him, Trump. But what? You don't have pronouns?
So you know how what Matt Walsh has made a career of asking people on the left to define what a woman is? He'll say, what is a woman?
Yeah.
I think we should start asking the right, what are pronouns?
Oh.
And see if they can define what a pronoun is.
Absolutely.
Because I don't think they know that it's like a part of speech. And like they exclusively see it as like a gender issue, part of the culture war, and they don't actually know what a pronoun is.
Much like they don't know that there's multiple forms of the word your. It's just no apostrophe. Donald Trump doesn't understand capitalization. He doesn't understand his native tongue. Of course he doesn't know what a pronoun is.
Yeah, so we should start that if anyone has an opportunity to
we
do
have
that.
Any meme masters in the audience?
Yeah. So, like I said, Mark Kelly started making some media appearances. And on the previous episode, you know, Jesse had revealed his Mark Kelly tattoo. He was all in.
Explain the joke. Explain the joke. No one's going to understand what that means.
There's no joke. You literally have a Mark Kelly tattoo.
It's really good, too.
Yeah.
Like the portrait style where it really looks like him.
Yeah, you know when people submit pictures of their dog and then they put him in like a medieval outfit? That's kind of what you have, but for Mark Kelly.
Yeah.
So you have him in like armor. It looks really good.
So Brittany's joke is, if I'm going a little hard as a fanboy on somebody, or if I'm... Or even if I'm like talking shit about somebody, she'll say, oh, come on, go ahead and show him your Donald Trump tattoo.
Yeah. Yeah. And feel free to steal that, everyone, because it is a winner. Jesse didn't play it as though it's a winner right now.
Yeah,
because
I couldn't think of how you do it.
But I'm telling you, it is a winner in social situations. And if you ever meet us and I do it in front of you and you already know the bit and you don't laugh, I'm going to be very disappointed.
If you act like Brittany acts around when we're around people and I tell jokes she's heard before, don't act like her, because she will sit there frowning and stoic, even though everyone around her is laughing.
Okay. So, like I said.
All right, talk about my tattoo.
Yeah, yeah. Senator Mark Kelly started doing media. He, up until this previous week, had been really silent while everyone else was really getting out there and submitting their audition tapes for Kamala Harris.
Yeah, they're sizzle reels.
Yeah, and Mark Kelly finally got out there, and he went on MSNBC to talk about Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and the VP race.
And what do you think that Kamala Harris, given her weaknesses over the border or the attacks that she's going to take over the border from the Republicans, what do you think she needs in a vice president?
Caddy, I think that's going to be something that the vice president is going to have to figure out. I think she's got a lot of great choices out there. My focus is not on this, and this is not about me. I mean, this is about the future of our country. You know, having somebody in the White House, having Kamala Harris in the White House that is going to be focused on bringing down the cost of prescription drugs, making education more affordable child care, or Donald Trump, which I expect what we would see is more collateral damage to our alliances, taking away fundamental freedoms and rights. I mean, he's running with a guy, you know, who says that in cases of rape and incest, you know, two wrongs don't make a right. I have a hard time understanding what's wrong with a woman who has been raped deciding to terminate a pregnancy. I mean, this is a guy who says that when women get, you know, unintended pregnancies, that it's an inconvenience. The inconvenience is when you get stuck in traffic on your way home from work. I mean, so the two of them together, I mean, Donald Trump is bad by himself. You combine him with a guy who was not picked to win an election. He was picked to overturn an election. That's a problem. And that's why I think every American needs to realize that they got to get out there. If they can, knock on doors, make phone calls, and more than anything, they need to vote and get their friends to vote.
So I have an appointment on Monday for tattoo removal.
Well, I mean, no, listen. Look,
nothing he said was wrong. Nothing he said was bad. But it just, it pales in comparison when you watch Tim Walz just fucking use Donald Trump as a goddamn welcome mat in front of his house, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. As the kids would say, Mark Kelly, I think, is lacking. I don't think they would say lacking. I don't know. I can't say. What do the kids say?
His riz is very diminished.
Yeah, that's exactly what the kids would say. But I was trying to work in riz, so thank you for knowing where I was going with that. I'm finally to the age where I start talking about what the kids are saying.
Yeah.
It makes me seem very young and youthful. So this was...
Young and youthful?
Yes.
Yes, it does.
It does. So... the juxtaposition here, I'm going to play Tim Walz being asked about the border, because that question was kind of loaded with a lot of different things. It was the border. It was other things that I don't remember at this point, because we're how many hours into the show? So
an hour and almost 10 minutes.
Here's Tim Walz responding to the issue of the border.
But he's not interested in solving the problem. What Democrats need to do is acknowledge, and he has ginned up fear, but our border can work better. It doesn't, there's no reason someone seeking asylum, which we will always be a guiding light for, shouldn't have to wait 7 years to have that adjudicated. That's why this bill would have made it 90 days and people either got it or they were removed. And I think seeing a plan that's out there, talking about it with folks, knowing that he's not going to do anything. You know, he talks about this wall. I always say, let me know how high it is. If it's 25 feet, then I'll invest in the 30-foot ladder factory. That's not how you stop this. You stop this using electronics. You stop it using more border control agents. And you stop it by having a legal system that allows for that tradition of allowing folks to come here just like my relatives did, to come here, be able to work, and establish the American dream. He's not interested in that. He wants to demonize. Look, we produce most of the turkeys that you're going to eat in Thanksgiving. Those are immigrants working hard, establishing themselves here. What's he going to do? Is he going to take them all out? And how is the economy going to work? My neighbors, whether they're Republican or Democrats, don't want to demonize their neighbors. They just want a safe border. She's got a plan. The Lankford Cinema bill was a big key to it, and Donald Trump doesn't want it. He thrives on chaos. Man. He thrives on this idea that's only him.
Was that a clip with Anderson Cooper?
I think so.
Because I can hear Anderson.
So this was also a good example. The reason I wanted to play it is because there's some concern that Kamala Harris is going to start veering toward the right a bit on immigration and the border in order to win over moderates or even possibly people on the right. And this is an example, I think, of how you talk about immigration and you talk about the border being on the left. You still talk about pathway to citizenship. You do not talk about only cracking down on the border and you don't lean into that. And so I feel like Tim Walz did a really great job of balancing that.
Well, also, I don't think it's inappropriate to acknowledge that what we need to do is just shore up our legal system and have a better, more streamlined way for people to come and request asylum from a horrible, violent, perilous situation in their home country. Nobody I know, other than like far, far leftists or libertarians, want completely open borders where people just come and go with no checks. I don't know anybody except for those polarized extremes who want that. But we shouldn't have a cruel system that is rooted in white supremacy and racism and bigotry and fear. We need a system that works for the benefit of people coming here, but also for the benefit of the country and our economy. If we were to do this deportation en masse that Donald Trump's talking about, the American economy is going to fucking collapse. Mark my words.
So I want everyone to end the show being Walz-pilled. So we're going to end the show with my favorite Tim Walz clip. And this is when he was on with Jake Tapper. And this is just such a masterclass in how to respond to questions about progressive policies and the record that progressives have in terms of improving people's lives.
But you've legalized recreational marijuana, you passed universal background checks on guns, you expanded LGBTQ protections, you implemented tuition-free college for low-income Minnesotans, there's free breakfast and lunch for school kids. Do you think your record is an asset to the ticket, or would it risk fueling Trump's attacks as you being a big government liberal?
what a monster. Kids are eating and having full bellies so they can go learn, and women are making their own healthcare decisions, and we're a top five business state, and we also rank in the top three of happiness. Look, they're going to label whatever they're going to label. He's going to roll it out, mispronounce names, you know, to try and make the case. The fact of the matter is, where you see the policies that Vice President Harris was a part of making, Democratic governors across the country executed those policies, and quality of life is higher, the economies are better, all of those things. Educational attainment is better. So yeah, my kids are going to eat here, and you're going to have a chance to go to college, and you're going to have an opportunity to live where we're working on reducing carbon emissions. Oh, and by the way, you're going to have personal incomes that are higher, and you're going to have health insurance. So if that's where they want to label me, I'm more than happy to take the label.
Color me walls pilled. Maybe I don't need to do a removal. I can just do a cover up of my Mark Kelly tattoo with a Tim Walz one.
Add hair and eyebrows.
Only on the side. See, the bald top of the head works fine too.
Oh, yeah.
Any a little bald on the top?
I can't picture it now.
Who are we talking about? What's happening?
Well, no, what I love about that response is they are going to label what they are going to label. Democrats need to stop this because they always get afraid of what Republicans are saying about them. Who cares? They lie.
That's the tattoo that needs to be had, is on every Democrat who runs for office. Republicans are going to do that anyway. They're already going to do that. Don't change who you are and what you believe in your core values based on the attacks that will come, because they're going to come no matter what.
Right. And if they want to say that you're too progressive, great. Look at your record of improving people's lives
what
and making people happy.
Kids have full bellies and now they can learn undistracted from their hunger.
Exactly. Fuck off.
Fuck off indeed, Brittany Page. We're going to leave you there. We would invite your participation in this, what I believe is a great episode with some great stuff that was said. You're welcome, America, and by extension, the world. If you'd like to get in on episode 923, 657-464-7609. And of course, you can email a voice memo or a regular old-fashioned email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. Please consider supporting our work on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. For $2 a month, you can help support this work. If a fraction of our audience were to give $2 a month, we could fundamentally grow this operation into something much larger, more substantial, reaching more people, and we appreciate your consideration. We love and appreciate you, and we will see you next time. For Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollamore, and this has been I Doubt It.